Can I take you back to pre-2005, the pre-mandate to focus on the judiciary? When did the outreach activity start?
Outreach activity started, if my souvenir is correct, in 1999. Yes, 2 years after we began our first cases.
And what led to that decision? Why did it happen in that year?
You know, interestingly enough, it was a change in the culture of the way we think. We came out from the box. The box of the thinking process was very narrow. The Security Council did not have rondees to serve as judges. One, the Security Council decided not to establish the tribunal in Rwanda for three reasons. First, they don't want death penalty. Second, they want serenity and peaceful conditions. And third, they have no provision to enable the victims to claim compensation in our statute. Therefore, they decided to establish it here. That created a challenge. How to sensitize people down there about that? And the challenge is how to do it without exposing ICTR independence and autonomy to any attempt from the government of Rwanda that has not yet been, in my view, immune completely from reproach. So how could you play a middle role without releasing or without giving up on your freedom? So as a result, we did not even have rondees to work with us within the tribunal. It was very scary to have rondees to work inside the tribunal, except for rondees who were taking care of witnesses and rondees who can come and interpret in court. But for them, there was kind of a very uneasy feeling. So I remember that it became self-evident to all involved parties that you cannot do the business alone. You need good partners. Not only that, Rwandan government was the requester to have the tribunal, but don't forget that at the time of the decision-making to establish and pass the Security Council resolution, Rwanda voted against the tribunal, but promised to support. So to begin with, it was like a cat and dog relationship. You were observing how this will react, etc., etc. So it became self-evident also that we need their cooperation fully to make ends meet in terms of protecting witnesses, identifying witnesses, taking them out, bringing them, investigating, collecting evidence from the ground. So we started relying heavily on them. But from 1999, the registrar, the then registrar, Mr. Okali, thought that it will serve a great deal if we have an office in Kigali, which is not located in the same compound as the prosecutor, but which will be a neutral office to try to convey the message coming from Arusha to the people. So he decided to inaugurate a program which was called at that time Support to Potential Witnesses and Witnesses. And the program was conceived in a way that we shall provide psychological support, material support to potential witnesses and witnesses. And it exposed the tribunal to criticism from the other side of the defense. But at the same time, we decided to narrow down the program and focus only on the witnesses. And by so doing, we also wanted to spread the message among the people. So he negotiated with the government of Rwanda, and they welcomed the idea, and they gave him a big building and say, okay, free of charge, you can fix it as you wish, well located, and you can use it until you finish. That's where the idea came from, to have now a very forceful outreach program. Before, we only have communication program that goes from here to Rwanda, but we did not have a relay office in Kigali to take the message and spread it throughout the country.
Do you think it would have been better to have started that outreach at the beginning, or was that just not possible?
Yes, I believe the lesson learned is that even before you establish a court, you have to start an outreach program to sensitize people to say, we are coming, we are sending a court, the court, this is the mission of the court, and you start doing so. And second, when a decision is taken, when you are deploying, you have to deploy also a powerful team that will be on the ground, hitting the ground, and bringing the message to everybody. But given the circumstances, that was one of the shortcomings that was justifiable at that time because of the condition that existed on the ground at that time. But it is a lesson learned.
And once it got started, once that outreach started with trying to educate the Rwandan public about the tribunal, what were some of the major challenges that you faced in getting that message out?
The major challenge is that you don't have the full cooperation of the host country government. The government is so touchy, sensitive on issues that are not screened to be brought directly to the people. For us, our first move was to have the government to authorize the broadcasting of all the proceedings. It could have been magnificent because the Rwandan people are known to listen carefully to radio. TV is something that the most fortunate have. But the radio, my goodness, they can listen. And we know the role that the radio play in the genocide. And it was our philosophy that by using the radio to convey this, it will be very effective. But we did not get support from the government. The only exception we got was only when we have a decision. Then the decision is read in court and we relay the decision directly without, because we cannot allow anyone to screen us.
And why was the government reluctant to allow that?
It's only the government that can answer that question. You can, I would not like to elaborate on it, but you can elaborate on it yourself to understand why. But what is very sure is that that was a hindrance.
Are there things, I mean, I'm thinking of future tribunals that might be in a similar situation. Mm-hmm. Are there things that you think the tribunal could have done that would have made it more likely for the government to have cooperated?
You know, I propose, because of my past experience and exposure in Rwanda, I propose to the second, to the third registrar when he took over in March 2001, I said, sir, there is a need for you to request New York to give you access to the bandwidth utilized by the broadcasting station of Radio UNAMIR in Rwanda, so that the equipment that they use there, we can use it and have to throw directly all what we have to Rwanda, to DRC, to Burundi, to Uganda, to Kenya, as the Security Council resolution said, that our judicial output could contribute to this. Because I was in Rwanda, and I know how effective was the UN radio. And it was powerful because I was very often on the radio training people, having debate with the people. And I believe that at the beginning, if we were given, while we were getting deployed, the outreach was given a powerful tool like broadcasting of the proceedings that we're having in those targeted countries, it will be so good. in the sense that it will go straight to the grassroots without being screened. And people can make up and learn through the judicial process, and it will influence the way the perception that people have about these luxurious court proceedings that has been going on in Arusha. And it will help them also to look beyond their own and draw strength from it and try to move towards achieving the excellence in setting up a reliable, credible, and full of due process and transparent, fair, and equitable judicial system. That is a key lesson that we have to have. Unfortunately, the UN told us that they redeployed the materials to another duty station, I believe in Afghanistan, and that they don't have it. And Rwanda did not give us also full access to their radio. It would have been good, but for obvious reasons, the will was not there. But the lesson that one has to learn is to give also the capacity to the future tribunal to reach out beyond the normal reaching out process that is preparing leaflet, books, and that is good for you, but not good for the people on the ground. The people on the ground wants to hear. What did they say? Because for some cultures, hearing things from the radio is like God is speaking through the radio. And you can have debate. And of course, we have to have a program that will start from the beginning to organize town hall meetings, to move roving program that will go from point A, B, C, D, to cover, not do what right now the ICC is doing. The ICC has learned a lot from us, but they have not been innovative enough, they have not been truly proactive enough. Of course, there is also political considerations. The political considerations are simple. The regimes want to manipulate and instrumentalize the international criminal justice system. Provided that you go along their philosophy and their main objective, they will support you. If you go against their main objective, they will turn their back on you. A clear example is what is happening with ICC in Uganda. So, in order for us to avoid this in the future, we need to set a strategy that will give that resources to and the tools of mass communication, mass broadcasting, to reaching out to the people that you are targeting, not only in a specific area, but the whole region. And that will be very helpful. And radio should be instrument of priority in those circumstances is very important.